Welcome to Hello Universe, a podcast about spirituality in our everyday lives. We're your co-hosts, Kylie and Eva.
Hey everyone, it's Eva.
It's Kylie.
Welcome back to Hello Universe. That's good.
I wanted to go, full confession, I wanted to go bow chicka wow wow, but then I felt self-conscious.
And then you held back.
I held back.
All right, next time we're going to go full force.
You got to go full force. So I'm sorry, I cheated you listeners.
Yeah. Hello, it's so good to be back with you, Kylie, with our beautiful listeners. How are you doing?
I am so good. How are you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm good, especially on the tail end of this amazing, like, soul nourishing medicine of a podcast we just recorded.
Oh my gosh, guys, this is the Hello Universe first, which is that I may or may not have gotten very weepy in this episode.
Yeah. Like,
you gotta listen all the way to the end to get there. But yeah.
I mean, you'll hear like the snot and the sniffles. It was like, we didn't like totally bawl, but it was kind of, I mean, it was.
Yeah.
But by the way, these are happy, happy, moved tears, not like sad, like dramatic depression tears.
Gnashing of your teeth, pulling of your hair, kind of crying. Yes. Yes. That's an important distinction.
Yeah.
Not because we don't love the gnashing of your teeth tears, but you probably don't want to listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that may not be like the most enticing.
Yeah.
Podcast intro.
Carrie is just like such a beautiful, really soulful person, and her insights, I just felt like one statement after another, I was just like kind of moved in really, really meaningful ways. But before we share a little more about Carrie Hummingbird, do you have any special offers?
Not anything in your business you want to tell people about?
Let's talk about quietude. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. I feel like I don't really advertise this program enough. For you two listeners who don't know, quietude is my meditation program. And I don't talk about it because it's kind of like this thing where people just like randomly trickle in. And mm-hmm. I kind of have liked how that's worked. But as I like do this work, I just remember how much I love this program because of the way that it's set up. But if you don't already know, meditation has been like a huge part of my journey and my life. And it is one of the direct ways in which I feel like I connect with source, connect with God, connect with my God self. Mm-hmm. It's the way that I tap into my own internal wisdom, have created so much self-trust, have developed all of that, like self-awareness, have done so much of the healing. And I just think it's such big medicine. So if you are someone who's a deep thinker who wants to like be able to toss your spiritual questions around with somebody, with the through line of also deepening your meditation practice, deepening your relationship with yourself, strengthening your intuition, all the good things that come when you are in quietude, essentially, and where you can hear the voice of God. Yeah, this program is for you.
I mean, I am biased because I feel like I basically experienced a beta version of this. That's how even I first met. But I think as someone who struggled for a long time to have a regular meditation practice, and full transparency, now I've just recognized that regular for me is not at the same time in the same place.
Yep. Yep.
Every day.
Which is also so important for people to get to. Yeah.
But it felt like such a gift to have some just gentle accountability, right? To like, sometimes you can say you want to do a thing and then it just helps to have someone who's holding the space for you to then do the thing. Mm-hmm. But then also shit comes up, whether it's boredom and falling asleep or whether it's like confusion and anger or whatever it might be. And I think it's lonely to do this stuff alone, right? It's why we have a podcast together.
Yeah.
Right? So I just think that I love quietude as a program because I think like you practice meditation in solitude, but then if
you want to do it with, that's like such, that's the thing that I hear from so many of my clients is that they're like, whoa, like this is really cool. It's like, it's so gratifying, I think, for people to even have a space where they can ask these questions and have this dialogue where it's not so isolated. Because
yeah,
meditation is meant to be a solitary thing, but it's not meant to be an isolating thing. And so like, that's why sanghas are really important, or like, I always recommend, I think it's great if you have the opportunity to go to a retreat or sit with a community, like, but a lot of that's not happening right now, you know, yeah. COVID, or sometimes you can't get away for like a week long retreat. And so I think this also can really serve that purpose of like having a community. And I can tell you, like, if you are interested in the spiritual stuff, it is, it feels gratifying. Like that is definitely one of the main things that people, you know, say when they like invest in having this space for themselves. So
yeah,
I love it. And thank you for your kind words. So if you are interested in deepening your meditation practice, you can learn more on my website at evaliao.com. Oh, also, yes, I briefly mentioned this at the end of my podcast, but just a heads up, my Instagram name is going to be changing from Bad Bitch Living to I Am Eva Liao. So if you see that switch in your Instagram, know that that's me. If you're not already following me, you can find me there. Eva Liao was taken seriously by like all the versions of Eva Liao were taken by people who posted in 2017 and have posted two posts.
No, so annoying. But I actually love I Am Eva Liao because I think journey is about the I and like the sovereignty of the I think it's beautiful.
So, I think the universe.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like it's a real claiming of. And so I'm like, I'm feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I love this for you.
Thanks. What about you? What do you want to share?
Okay. So I will, I knew when I went into the summer mode that I was going to, a lot of things were going to fall away and a lot of clarity was going to emerge. And I knew it's just this deep body knowing that I was going to emerge. And instead of having 700 projects and a million new courses every week, I was going to have like all of that was going to pour into one container. And it's ready-ish. It's so close to being ready. And I'm like beside myself with excitement. And also I'm nervous, like in all transparency, because it feels big, you know, whenever you see the extent of what you're capable of or the extent of your dream, like if it doesn't scare you a little bit,
yeah,
you know, maybe good.
Not big enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in order to like kick off the announcement of all of this, I'm going to do a free 3-day workshop, which I'm super excited about. And the workshop is called Money Magic, Deep Healing for Spiritual Entrepreneurs. Or Deep Abundance Healing. I don't know. Working tagline.
Yeah.
You get the idea. But yeah. We're going to actually do a whole episode about this, so I'll keep this brief. But you know, like this, like tending to my relationship to material resources from a spiritual perspective has been some of the most profound healing work that I've done. And I think it's a really complicated space for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so fucking excited to do this workshop. So if you're somebody who has a complicated relationship with money, who has a lot of stress or worry about money, if you're someone who wants to run a business or wants to quit your job or wants to just have a sense of physical ease when it comes to being taken care of financially by the work you do in the world.
And get out of scarcity.
Yeah. Then come to this workshop because you will learn how to make money if you do the free workshop, if you sign up for the program, but it's deeper than that. It's about like being in right relationship with yourself and the divine in terms of like trusting safety, getting out of scarcity, knowing that you're okay, understanding all of the stories that are asking for attention around your relationship to these topics. Like it is a big, important, so beautiful place, and it'll change your life. So you should go.
Yeah, I love this. When is it?
September 29th will be our workshop. So it's free and you can register at KylieCaldwell.com.
Awesome. I am so excited about this. Well, first of all, I can't wait for the unveiling of this program. And we're going to like really talk about that. We'll dive deeper into this. But also, I just know how this has been such deep medicine for you. And like you, I can just feel it. Like the energy behind this has been percolating. And I think I'm really like excited for anyone who comes into your field to learn about this, because it's going to be done. Sometimes it was like this energy of like learning about money that's very like mask. This like this energy of like, do you know what I
capitalism? It's just capitalism. It's
but even
capitalism wearing spirituality.
Yeah, it's totally right.
You know, like oh, you can measure your spirituality by how much money you're making. No, this is not some prosperity gospel bullshit.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like,
this is going to be the real deal. Like, really down to earth, very authentic. Like, I just know, just because that's just their teaching style, it can't be devoid of that. It's so, I think that's going to be huge for people.
Yeah. I'm really, really
excited. Yeah. Yay! Cool, cool, cool.
Thank you.
All right.
Let's chat a little bit about our beautiful guest this week, shall we?
Yes. So Carrie Hummingbird, first of all, beautiful name. And I didn't really know what to expect from this podcast. And then, as we said earlier, we ended up weeping because we talk a lot about, we talk about a couple of different things, but a lot of the meat of this conversation is about motherhood and healing the mother wound, which applies, by the way, not just to people who are mothers. This is anyone who has a mother, like, which, you know, and our relationships with our mothers, and also like the beauty of motherhood. Like, it was just so tender that I felt it in my bones. It like,
yeah,
I don't know. It like, it really shifted something inside of me that I still need to digest, if I'm being honest.
I am a sucker for like vulnerable, authentic story. You know, like when someone can show up and share their story with like real honesty and self-reflection, we always can see ourselves in that story, and it's always some of the best medicine. And obviously I'm like partial to a story that's a deep exploration of motherhood because it's my own, you know, it resonates. But above and in addition to that, just the like honesty with which Carrie brings to this topic, like really.
Yeah. The honesty, but also the experience and the vulnerability, like it was all, and the depth, like there's just so much depth in this conversation. So it's really, if you want to like feel some good feels, this is a good episode, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So I was telling Nick not to make much noise in the kitchen when you started talking, and did we actually talk about her book yet?
No.
Did we? Okay. All right. No. So I was about to do that, but then I was like, wait, did Eva already do this? And I was distracted. Nick was like, can I make seltzer? And I was like, no.
You're like, give me 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, can I actually ask you a question? When you record, does it allow you to pause?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So it might make it easier. Now, we're figuring this out now that you're not. But rather than make your notes, you could just hit pause. And then resume.
Well, I could do it if I caught it right at that time.
Oh.
But usually what happens is it happens too late. And then so I'd have to go back and whoever's editing would still have to go back and do it anyway.
Yeah. I'm with you. Okay. All right. All right. Sorry. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Carrie Hummingbird is a soul guide. She's the host of a podcast called The Soul Nectar Show, although it is likely changing to the Carrie Hummingbird podcast.
Yeah.
And she's written a whole bunch of books, many of them bestsellers. Her most recent one is a number one international bestseller called Love is Fierce, Healing the Mother Wound. So if you are moved by this conversation, spoiler alert, you will be. You should definitely go check out her books.
Yes. All right, everybody. Enjoy. Kylie, would you like to do the honors?
Yeah, absolutely. We are so excited this week to have the beautiful Carrie Hummingbird on. Carrie, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kylie and Eva. I'm so excited to be here.
So we always go right for the deep end, which is tell us, what is spirituality for you and how does it show up in your everyday lived experience?
You know, spirituality for me is like water or like air. It's that intimate conversation with the divine that happens in every present moment, in every interaction, in every thing I'm noticing and how I'm feeling in my body, how even just sitting here with you. I mean, it's in every single aspect of my existence. And I feel like at some point as a soul, I'll look back over this experience of my lifetime and I'll be just so interested in every little nuance of every little thing that I paid attention to and didn't pay attention to. And that could probably entertain me for at least like another eon until I embody again. I feel like this spirituality is sort of for me becoming aware that that's what's going on and flipping the veil back on it. And it's like, what a delight to be aware of it consciously while it's happening and also be aware of all these other multi layers on top of that and how even this moment is so much texture to it and it has richness. And I feel like that for me is so much more fulfilling than living at the surface of life, sort of bumping along the currents and wondering like, why did that thing just hit me? You know, it's like being tuned in deeply allows me to sense that there's even a bump coming.
Mm. Yeah. What an eloquent, graceful answer. I love that so much.
I love too, like we ask everybody this question and in some ways there's like very clear repeating themes and also there's so much unique wisdom each and every time someone answers this question. Like this idea of the texture of the moment. I never would have thought of those words and I knew exactly what you meant as soon as you said that. And that feels like such a gift to have received, this idea of like just noticing and observing and being with the texture of the moment. Sometimes I can put a lot of pressure on myself to like, be here, do it, be now, be present, damn it.
Yeah.
It's not that easy.
It's not. It's really not, but I love this texture of the moment. I'm tucking that one into my heart.
Yeah.
I had this great quote by Richard Rudd. He's the founder of the Gene Keys, if anybody's interested in that. I am enamored of Gene Keys.
Yeah, we actually had one guest on come on and sort of give us the Gene Keys 101. But yeah, we'd always be interested in hearing more.
I was super intrigued. So yeah.
This quote is like so, and I posted it up. You know, I have all these post-its that I look at, things that I'm like, oh, don't forget that thing. And I put it up there. And this one says, timelessness is never ahead of us in the future, but hidden deep within the folds of the present. Mm-hmm. And that timelessness is never ahead of us in the future, but hidden deep within the folds of the present.
Mm. Yeah, that's good.
And to me, the texture of the moment is related to that deep fold. I started learning about this when I began learning how to do shamanic healing and this idea of being the hollow bone and being so present that you could perceive, sense nuances, even receive downloads or information or images on behalf of a person or sense even what's going on inside their bodies in the moment is that level of presence. And it's like time expands in those moments where I get this sense of what timelessness must be like were I not incarnated in a human vessel that's finite. And it's these little hints, you know, that point the way. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with impatience either. And that's this whole bit about timelessness is on my mind because I'm also processing my shadow of impatience. And as a manifester, I can be, you know, quite dedicated to getting things done very quickly. And, you know, it's sort of like, I would like it to be done before it starts.
Yeah.
So if you can relate to that, it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's something I'm toying with, but I like this textural moment thing. And something rich there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is spoken by someone who clearly has experienced the richness of it, because just in hearing your answer, what I love about it so much is it reinvigorates my love also for this way of living, meaning I feel so blessed to be somebody who has, for whatever reason, gone down this path and as a result, lives life in a way in which you're kind of noticing there's so much, just the singular moment can be so rich and there's so much going on, like the layers that you talked about. And I think, what a blessing that we get to experience life this way. I feel truly grateful, I think, because I know that there have been times in my life where, you know, maybe I felt a little bit more flat. I didn't necessarily feel that way, or I wasn't able to like appreciate just like the joy of, you know, the sound of a bird or the way that the cloud was moving or something like that. You know, when you're just getting, you're just, for me anyway, it was being disconnected from what is, disconnected from life. And I'm just like, just hearing your words and the poetic way that you describe like the nature of spirituality and the nature of being, it's like, it makes me feel zesty. Like, yes, like this is what it's all about.
Zesty. Can I ask you a question, Carrie?
Yeah.
Because I relate so much to what we're all saying, and in particular this point that Eva made about like sometimes being really in this rich moment and then other times feeling like a like numbness or a flatness, I think was the word you used. And I'm curious for you, what is the how do I ask this question? I mean, maybe I'm asking the question that every great spiritual book is asking, which is like, how do you access that place, right? Because I think we've all had an experience of like tapping into what we're calling the texture of the moment. And I'm sure we've all had experiences of being deeply impatient or kind of numbed out. And what is the process for you of kind of returning to center? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Impatience was my best ally for a good part of my life. I mean, it definitely motivated me to get a whole bunch of stuff done. And I think that it's, you know, it's part of the human experience for a reason. This is one of the reasons I love the Gene Keys, is that it brings you through this understanding that the shadows are not the enemy. They're actually doorways. They're doorways to discover.
Can I interrupt and just have you say, maybe explain what the Gene Keys are for people who may not be familiar?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the Gene Keys is Richard Rudd's creation. They're actually related to human design types. Or for anybody who's done their human design chart, the Gene Keys essentially are the gates in the human design chart. However, what Richard's done, which is super fascinating, is that he matched up the Gene Keys, the gates in the human design chart, with the I Ching, which is like an ancient system of understanding yourself through spirituality and different energetics, like archetypal energies in the human collective, right? So it's fascinating. We all have 64 gene keys in the human genome, this spiritual, energetic, embodied at some level, these frequencies. And so now we can actually have 11 that we know we're working on in this lifetime. And you get that by getting your chart and looking up like what, you know, what it is. The thing about it is that when you look at it, it's like, what? These are like the thought tunnels that I've traveled around in my entire life. And people didn't understand what I was talking about, but these all link and correlate for me in my mind, like how my mind processes data. Mm-hmm. It's just fascinating.
Yeah.
So that's basically what they are. They give you an entry point to discover the mental pathways you've been on your whole life anyway. And so it's just like a recognition, like, oh yeah, that's what I've been dealing with, impatience and conflict and, you know, disappointment. And mm-hmm. I'm telling you some of mine, right? Like judgment,
yeah,
you know, opinion, yeah. Like these are all like, I've had these in my chart. I'm like, oh my God, no.
It makes sense. Brain. Yeah. It like yeah. makes sense. Yep.
I'm not broken. Like it was a point, like I was made to be this way. So, but we can move through that. that shadowy, you know, each gene key points to a shadow, a gift, and a higher frequency. And of course, we all think, oh, we God love to be in the higher frequencies all the time. I want to be in peace all the time. I want to be in perfection all the time. And that's not the human experience. So we start off with these shadows, and then we learn the gift that bridges between the shadow, you know, our human nature and our spiritual nature. So we actually are perfecting the gift at all times that's in between the shadow and the acidic frequency. That's the human experience, is bridging the divine and the human, right? The animal and the divine. So we get to be all of that. And that's pretty cool when you wake up to it. And that, you know, that adds a lot of contextual things. So how do I go about it? I notice I'm in my shadow. I go, oop, there is a shadow. That was a judgment. Or I just had an opinion, or, you know, whatever it is. And I used to really judge that I had the judgment, you know, or like judge that I had the opinion, and be like, because the judgment's in my chart. So I'd be like, judge. You're not doing it right. You know, now that I have the map, I can go, oh. So now it's more like, oh, wow. Okay. So there's a judgment. What's the feeling sense of that? And where does it live in my body? And where is it located? Is it located some space specifically? And can it be opened with some breath? Can it be witnessed? Can I love it? If I can't love it yet, can I at least honor its existence and breathe through it? Can I allow it to be there? Or am I still trying to get it out of me? You know, and the whole journey to become a shamanic healer is so fascinating in itself for that exact same process. It's like there's this concept in shamanic healing of like removing things from the person. So like, oh, I identified this shadow or this energy that's negative or gunked up or whatever, and I'm going to take it out of that person, like rattle it loose and tobacco that thing and clear it and then fill it with light. And there's like, and these are all beautiful, beautiful processes. And there's also just sitting with it and being with it and accepting that it's there and that it has a purpose. I mean, so what does impatience teach me? It teaches me about my mortality. You know, it teaches me about my immortality and my deep desire to be fulfilled with the time I have on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. And seeing it that way, I think, brings in so much more. Well, you know, what I like to call clear seeing. It's compassion, it's understanding. And then you get to like, it's not this, then it no longer falls into the category of only good or bad. It's not so binary, you know, it isn't binary. It's all, it's everything. It's all together. So yeah, I loved when Kylie, you know, your answer to Kylie's question, which was like, well, how do you get back into that space? And your first response was like, you know, it's supposed to be there. It's part of the experience. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that first and foremost, I think, is like the entryway into getting back into that space, ironically.
And I really also love what you're saying about shadow not being necessarily something to remove, but like it serves a purpose. Like the way I often think about the shadowy parts of ourselves is that they are always the parts of ourselves we have projected, right? Because probably someone else rejected them before us, but for whatever combination of reasons, however you see it, there's some, like there's these like little rejected bits. Like I have a little jar of like candle wax that's like sitting on my shelf, right? It's like, this is like all these little like rejected bits. And so when we like try to cast out the shadow or judge the shadow or like further reject it, we're just reinforcing the very thing that has caused the shadow to exist in the first place. When we can try, and it's not always easy to do that, at times it actually I think feels really, really overwhelming to do it, but when we can stop and turn to these shadowy bits of ourselves and say, like, what are you trying to offer me? Like, what is your wisdom, and how can we like understand that together? I think that's where all of the magic happens.
Oh yeah, all the magic does happen there. It's funny, I walk the path of a Mesa Keeper, which is a tradition from Peru in the Sacred Valley. It's like a portable altar. It has stones, medicine. They call them cuyas, but stones inside to help you on your path, right? And so I'm initiating people to create their own mesas tied to their gene keys, because once I found that handy map, I was like, oh my goodness, we're going to do that, because that's a fast path. Like, let's just do Destiny Mesa, you know, like let's just bypass human drama and just go right in, you know, because I'm very efficient. And I thought, well, I spent 20 years of my life on a couch, you know, talking about my problems and feeling broken. And if I could save somebody from that experience, I would rather, because like I said, there's so much richness in the moment. We don't need to avoid that. So, but in the Mesa, there's this cloth that's called the duality cloth. This is why I brought it up. One side is black and the other side is white. And on either side is a rainbow. And so when we were in Peru, my shaman teacher, who I hired to help the group, he says, okay, now take this one ball, this metallic ball in your hand and place it where you feel like you are right now. And so most people, we had just started the retreat. So most people place it somewhere in the black area, right? Like, cause they're like, oh, I'm not feeling great about myself, or, you know, they place it somewhere in the black area. And then he said, take the other ball and place it where you want to be. And like everybody except me, because I already knew the gig, everybody took the ball and put it way on the white side, like as far deep into the white side as they could get it. Like joy, please, you know, like delight. And mine was on the center line because I already knew the gig. Okay. Yeah. So it's like we are in duality. And when we're, until we learn how to work the energetics, we'll find ourselves swung way off into the shadows and then way off into the light and then ping-ponging sort of like between these sides until we get some measure of mastery with the energies. And then the masters are all in the center, like they're neutral. Mm-mm. They see all this happening, but they don't get swung off like way off one side or the other. They stay in this neutral, this zone. And I used to think that was BS. I was like, why would you stay neutral? Why would you be delighted? Why would you want to be like that? But there's a difference between bland living, which is a lot of people do bland living, and neutral in the center line of the polarity. They're very different experiences. I feel from the center line, you can be experiencing like grief and joy at the same time.
Yeah.
That's different than bland, fake, mediocre. I don't know.
Right. I think a lot of
times. I could judge it, but like, you know what I'm saying? When people like stay at the surface and they pretend and then they don't face anything really.
Right.
I used to do that.
Or I think some people have a craving for these exalted states of highness. And so when I heard you say neutral, what I understood that to be is like sometimes the misconception is neutral means that you are flat, like you're not joyful, that you're flat, like there's not enough there. But I hear what you're saying and I completely agree. Like neutral is really delicious because it's like room for the all, which is so much better than just some singular, experience.
Well, and I think probably to like bring us back to the language from the top of the show, like the texture of the moment lives in the neutral space, right? Like the past couple of days, I've had this very interesting experience of grief and kind of exhilaration, like really happening and unraveling simultaneously. And that's what I'm finding is that they are deeply related and they're asking to be present at the same time. And, you know, an older version of me, like 10 days ago, would have like made one wrong and one right. But I'm finding like I almost feel a little like teary-eyed at how profound this experience has been, precisely because they're both like, they're not competing with each other internally. They're just sitting there side by side, this grief and this like exuberance. The neutral space is, like it's where the good stuff is.
It's not making anything wrong, which is such a shift out of the binary thinking. And it's a process. I mean, it's uncomfortable to feel anger or to feel grief or to feel some of that more dense, you know, things on the dense spectrum. It's uncomfortable to feel those things. Certainly in my chart, it's uncomfortable to feel stress because I have the shadow of stress. Stress is a very uncomfortable embodied experience. Yet there is something powerful to feeling it because it does open a doorway to a recognition of how am I going to channel energy? Because to me, like, the stress is the energy. I used to be very upset if I felt stressed out. I wanted to feel not. So right, I would do the things that many people do. I would drink wine, you know, try to numb it out. I'd exercise in tons. I would, you know, comfort myself with food and all kinds of things I had to do. I even took the happy pills for a while to, you know, that they prescribed. But I didn't feel myself when I was distanced from my feelings that way. I felt strange, like I was behind some kind of glass wall and I wasn't really in touch with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I never liked that. I would rather be extreme with my emotions and make people uncomfortable than like be uncomfortable myself with no emotions. So but it was a pathway to learning, right? Like, I think what we're really talking about here, if we really want to break it down, is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about empathy and the ability being able to feel all the feelings, you know? And once you start feeling, you can't selectively feel. So it's not like you can just say, well, I only want to feel joy, but I don't want to feel grief.
Mm-hmm.
So when the feeling door opens, we feel it all.
Yeah. Can I ask you, this is a question that I get a lot from my clients that we will work together on this, but I'm curious, the question I get along a lot is, how do you feel your feelings? Meaning, some people are like, okay, yes, I get it now. I've heard you say it a million times. I saw it on social media. You need to feel your feelings. But I think it's a really valid question where people are like, what does that mean? How do you do that? And I'm curious to know what your process is for that.
Oh, well, that's really interesting. I felt them because I had to feel them because they were so big. I couldn't not feel them. And because nobody else around me was feeling them, I was also feeling, I was sort of like the marked person to feel for everybody in my family for a while. So some people have that experience of when you are in touch with your feelings and you're sort of feeling for everybody for a while. And then at some point, people just need to feel for themselves. And why is that so hard? Because we're disconnected. So when we're not in our bodies, then we can't sense our bodies or feel the nuances. So this is about nuance, right? And this is a layered thing. So a lot of the reasons why people can't feel anything is because there's some trauma or some things happened, usually early in life, or they just had modeling from people about not feeling, right? So that's a very, belonging is really important. So if you're wanting to belong and your environment is a not feeling environment, then your belonging means to not feel. And so you would try to not feel things or to hide it in order to belong. And we have a lot of that going rampant in our Western culture, at least, is that to belong, you have to like be cool, right? And not show your feelings. Well, that takes a while to unwind. And the way to unwind it is to become really deeply connected with your body and to feel safe enough to feel your body. And then to be in such a supportive container with a great guide, like the two of you, you know, to be in a great container where like it's safe enough to fall apart. And because you know you're not going to be judged by it, you're going to be received for it. So because you have to rewire those early programs, like that it's bad if I feel,
mm-hmm.
yeah. or it's bad if I'm angry, or bad.
It's not safe. It's not safe to feel.
It's not safe.
I love what you said about the body, though, because, I mean, it's really that I do think that's it. Like, it's the body. But what's so interesting is I still think a lot of people think that feeling is a head thing. Like, we just forget, like, even the name. The word itself, feeling, implies what it is. It's something that you literally have to feel. And that doesn't come from an intellect. That's not like a mind thing. It really is a body thing. And I'm just so glad that you mentioned that, because as someone who I think lived from my head for so long, I can totally relate to this idea of like, oh, wait, but I'm trying to like feel through my brain. Which is like, not possible.
Well, and I think one of the things I did for a long time, and, you know, it probably still shows up, everything's cyclical, but one of the things I think I did for a long time was that I was so used to not being embodied, right? So like, I grew up with a family that had a lot of feelings. Shout out, mom. Number one man. It's like, you know, like, emotions were big, for better or worse, but I, for my own reasons, had like a very disconnected relationship with my body. And so what would happen is I would have senses, I would have sensing, and I would ignore it and like punt it and shove it away before I'd even registered it, right? So like something would rise up, like a clenching in my chest, or like ripples of nerves in my stomach, or, you know, like a weight on my shoulder. And before I even could acknowledge it and respond it, I just automatically pushed it away. So I could talk language about, like, oh, I'm sad. And I'm sad because of this very long, complicated story. But I was not actually sensing in my body because I had forgotten how.
Yeah.
The story actually takes you out of the emotion, which is something I've been realizing over the last few years is how.
Oh, that's so good.
The story, right? And I'm a good storyteller. I mean, I was on psychotherapy couches for 20 years, right? Weekly. Yeah. So I was really good at the storytelling, but I wasn't so good with feeling the feelings underneath the story. And that's one of the things I've really been working on in my own path. And I think that the last few years, I finally found a mentor who was sophisticated enough to know how to guide somebody through that process. Because this is all new front. Like, I feel like we're on the frontiers of consciousness, which is so crazy. But to be talking about this, we're at the frontier of consciousness in learning how to feel your feelings, discern when they're coming on, know how to sit and be with them, and then let them do whatever they do through allowance and acceptance and not try to get rid of them until they pass of their own accord. And it's amazing how they will pass of their own accord very quickly, usually. And what's interesting is the use of story in that process. So we're really good culturally at telling stories that stir up feelings. But then instead of feeling the feelings, we take the story to the next level and we amp the whole thing up even more to make it even bigger. And that's called like drama, you know? So I was really good at creating drama, which is one of the reasons the second wave book is the second wave, transcending the human drama, because I needed to transcend the human drama. I need to learn, how was I amping it up? Like, how was I creating more drama? And it was through the telling and the retelling and the retelling of the story with more emphasis or more like proof, like, see, like this. And then I remembered this thing I didn't like that I never forgot. And then I remembered this. And so you could just kind of evidence base this whole reason why for you to be completely ballistic. But really, it's like I could have stopped at the moment the emotion showed up and stayed with it. And just let it be exactly, because that's the truest thing right there is that moment with the emotion.
So I have this mentor. His name is Will Wise. He is a very, very deeply magical person. And I remember the first time he basically was like, well, that's just a story. Like, you know, I called him, you know, I was like furious about something. And his answer was just basically like, but that's the story. Like, okay, great. That's a nice story. But he just kept trying to bring me back to like the what I was sensing and what I was feeling and trying to get me to recognize that there was space between the story, right? And I've worked with him now for like almost 2 years. And I recently told him, I was like, I was so fucking pissed at you.
It's really great being interrupted in your story, isn't it?
Yeah. He was like, yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah. But that's like, good. Isn't that so good? That's when you know sometimes when like someone's giving you the truth.
Oh, absolutely. Like, even as it was happening, like, you know, at least when someone that I love, especially someone that I love as a mentor, is pissing me off, I'm like, okay, something important is happening.
Yeah, you know? Now that's the great point I want to say is that sometimes people have this idea that when they start to work with somebody that they, you know, as a mentor, that they shouldn't be provoked. And, or like, for example, moms shouldn't provoke you, right? Because I'm a mom. And I had this idea that, you know, mom's job is to like, you know, be so kind and so nice and so loving. And like, here's your plate of cookies and, you know, all of this like loving, nurturing stuff. And when I became a mentor, I started realizing, and even before that, when I started my healing journey, I was like, that is so codependent. Like, that is crazy. I was like squashing myself to try to not upset other people. And I finally stepped out of it. It took a lot. I had to let go of a lot of things, including some family members. But I had to go, okay, wait a second. What is true? So now what I know on my journey is that, you know, mothering and mentoring are very similar energetics. So whether you're a mother or not, if you're mentoring, you're kind of already in that mother space, like you're helping other people to grow. That requires some healthy doses of truth. You know, like if you actually want to help somebody shift, you've got to, it's clear truth, right? But it's also like questions, like leading them places that might be uncomfortable for them. You know, it's like leading somebody to a place where they have to actually reflect on themselves a little bit more in a different way and face something uncomfortable. But that discomfort is a doorway, like we said, to something really, truly magnificent. Mm-hmm. But if you don't go through the door of it, you'll never get to the magnificent thing. You can't hop, skip and jump over that. So it's that tricky balance of like, you know, it requires willingness. Somebody who's not willing, there's nothing you can do there. You can just hold space and be loving. But until that person is willing to face the shadows, like we're talking about the shadows, you have to be willing to be uncomfortable to evolve. That's just part of it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And there's no nice way to do that. Like, honestly, there's passionate ways, but.
Right. It doesn't take, well, because something that I'm really learning also in my own work is that you mentioned there's no nice way to do it, but
nice is a word I don't like.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you're right.
I'm against nice.
Well, because I think loving isn't like loving.
What is loving mean? What does it mean?
Well, what I mean is like, I feel like loving is so much more powerful than being nice. Like sometimes I will say something and it's like, and it's coming from such a, that's all that it is. Like I can say it from a very clear place. So I know like this is like I'm saying this from like a loving place, but it may not be what they want to hear. It may not be like nice. It might like rub someone the wrong way. But I actually find that to be really interesting is that actually when you like stop trying to be so nice and but you know that this is like a loving thing, I think you are so much more helpful, like so much more helpful to people than, you know, trying to, the whole nice thing, it waters everything down and like complicates things because it's not just like direct, honest, true communication. And then like all these wires get crossed. And I'm still learning. Like it's still hard because I have, you know, people pleasing tendencies and all of these things. So it's a process.
That's part of that nice thing that collectively the women are trying to, we have to step out of that. I mean,
yeah.
It's so fascinating. I'm thinking a lot about motherhood. So I also am, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and this summer I shifted my work schedule, so I spent a lot more time with them, which means 4 months later they're totally pissing me off all the time.
That's natural.
Right? Like and that's, I mean, it's beautiful because it's been really interesting, in particular with my son who's older, like figuring out together how to navigate that, you know. Like just the other night, I was like, I have to leave or I will yell at you. And I don't want to do that. And so I have to leave the room. And he was like, no, but stay. And I was like, I can't. Like, it's not an option. And it felt really good. It felt messy because I was mad. And I also could tell that I was mad in a way that was ridiculous because he's full. You know what I mean? Like the whole thing, you know, when you're triggered and it's not really about, you know, your 4-year-old having his feet up instead of down or whatever, right? But it felt really clear. And so there was like love there because it was like, I'm very clearly stating what I need. And to your point about motherhood, I think we've been indoctrinated in this idea that motherhood is to sacrifice all of your needs. And you're a good mother if you don't have any needs. And if you like tend to your needs in the midnight hours after your kids are asleep. And anytime your needs encroach on your kids, you're a bad mom. And it just felt really good to be messy and like state really clearly, like, you got to figure this one out, kid, because I'm mad and I don't want to yell at you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know exactly what
that. Well,
yeah, I think it's beautiful, actually.
Can we like segue into something, what I think is might be a good segue?
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere, Carrie, about this idea of healing the mother wound. Is that something that you talk about? Because I read that and I was like, what is that about? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Just can I want to hear all about this, what this means to you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my book, I wrote and published it in 2000 and this year, early of beginning of the year.
Woohoo!
Love is Fierce, Healing the Mother Wound. And it's the mother wound is something we all possess simply because we're coming out of like thousands of years of women being mistreated. So, you know, the women, a mother is the one who's birthing our babies into being, right? And so the state of consciousness of a mother is the state of consciousness that the babies are being formed in and then being delivered into the world as a blueprint for their lifetimes to start to, you know, the starting point. So therefore, mother and the state of our mothers is really important because however our mothers think and feel about themselves, like the thoughts that go on in their heads, the feelings that go on in their bodies, the relationships they're involved in, the dynamics they have with other people, all of that is being seamlessly passed right into her, the baby that's being formed inside her womb. And then certainly beyond that, like, so as you deliver the baby to the world and then you're caring for the baby, there's the nurture part, right? Mm-hmm. And so all of this is passed, all that ancestral inheritance is passed through the mother into the child. So if you look at it, we've got like thousands of years of mistreating women. So did that just go away? No, that's like very much a part of what every woman today and actually every man too is contending with that abuse. And how are we going to heal as a collective humanity to bring order and balance to this system after all of this abuse has been happening for so long? So each one of us, whether you're, no matter what body you're in, and certainly I find it very interesting that coinciding with this healing, there also is a lot of gender identification changes, right? Because why? Because this is a painful wound and it needs healing. And there is a huge binary divide between the woman and the man. And so now there's like a spectrum filling the gap of like all different kinds of gender identities. And I believe that that's humanity's sort of unconscious way of healing the divide of what's been happening, because we're coming back into unity, right? Mm-hmm. So
it's interesting.
How are we going to come back into unity? So we have to, I believe mothers have a really special role in the evolution of humanity, in the fact that whether your children are already grown and you're like 70 years old, or whether you're just now pregnant, or whether you think you're going to get pregnant, all anywhere along that line, you can be so impactful with your own personal healing, because mothers are always energetically connected with our children through our bodies. Like that umbilical cord, you know, it doesn't ever really go away. Like it's there. Like the mothers can always feel their children no matter where they are in the world. We have like a little ESP about our kids. So
just a little like side story. I was at the playground this morning and there was a mom who was like, hey, she's like, do you mind watching my kid for 1 second? I have to go get a diaper out of the car. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And I realized as soon as she walked away, I was like, oh, this is super stressful because I can't just psychically know where your kid is. Like I can sit, I'll sit and I bring a notebook to the playground and I like write. And every once in a while I look up and I'm like, I can't see them. I'm just going to wait. Cause I can just sense like one, I'm super psychic, but two, like it's just the mom thing. And I was like, oh, this is not fun because I don't have my psychic power about this. So I don't know where the hell she is. That's actually
exactly. Cause you're connected.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're always, so we're, and every human being is connected with their own mother, which also makes it more interesting. So there's a lot that has to be healed in the space. Let's just say that every woman who is a mother, whether your children are grown or not, your personal healing is going to ripple out to all of those children and then their kids and everybody else. It's like seven generations forward and seven back idea that we get from the indigenous people about ancestral healing. And, you know, if you heal your relationship with your mother, that also is very healing for your whole family genetics and for, you know, for pretty much humanity. And it gives you a more pleasant life. So that's what that book is about, is really, you know, the mother wound is just, it's so pervasive. It's hard to just, you can't just point to one thing and say, oh, well, it impacts mother-daughter relationships. No, it impacts mother-son relationships. It impacts all human relationships. It impacts because you know, it's your identity. Your mom is that starting place of your self-love.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
It's a lot of pressure. So I want to, can I speak to that? Because I could feel, I'm feeling it's like, oh gosh, I'm the starting place for people's self-love.
Yes.
Like that?
It's funny you said that because I used to get like hits when I would read things and like, you know, I'm holding my 6-month-old son in my lap and I would read something that was like, you know, how you are in the womb impacts your kid for their whole life. And I was like, well, fuck, I'm already too late.
I've already done. The damage is done. I give up.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think let's speak to that because I do think that's, I think that's,
yeah, that's
a check and feel dense.
I didn't, I'm not a mom. So maybe that's why I didn't, I don't know. Maybe that, I don't know if that would be a reason for me to have a different interpretation, but I mean, this is in line with everything that I believe. So hearing you say that actually was just very affirming for me to be like fiercely unapologetic about my own liberation. Like that's basically what my core value is that the dedication to my I is a commitment to the all. And to me, I'm like, this is great because I get to be quote unquote selfish, even though, I mean, you know, selfish, I think has a negative connotation, but I mean this in a way that's like, okay, yeah, I can get on board with this. Let me take care of myself because that has a ripple effect through all things. And I would even say this applies to everyone. It's not just mothers, obviously, right? But in terms of them, but I think what you're saying is very true. There's a very special connection and origin point with mothers. And so anyway, I just wanted to share kind of how I interpreted that.
I actually think that selfish journey you just talked about that you're having is really built into the journey that anybody who becomes a mother goes through at some level, especially if you realize that you can't give them an empty cup. I mean, at some point as a mother, you come to that moment where you realize I've been giving and giving and giving and giving, and now I'm resentful. And I cannot give love when I'm resentful. So I need to fill up. Like, so you've got to do something to fill up your cup so that you can give some more. And then that's that balance of like, well, how much do I give and how much do I receive? And that reciprocity, that is a big teaching about being a mother and being a person, you know? So I feel like that is a conversation pretty much every woman at the very least, or, you know, getting the gender situation knocked out right here. It's hard for me to say, but in a woman's body, because I do feel like there's different genetics passed down, different ancestral conversations passed down through our genetics and into our physical bodies. And then so however you identify is secondary to that, but that is like happening in our bodies. We have ancestral crap to heal right now. And blessings to receive. So I don't want to totally blame the ancestors. We have a lot of ancestor bashing going on, like, but I feel like there's also many gifts and wisdom to restore from the ancestors, but also there's some things that don't work for us anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much that I want to say from us.
There's a lot.
I will say I recently actually started using this metaphor with my son, and the other day he goes, Mom, is there anything in your cup right now?
Oh, that's so cute.
And I was like, cute. And I was like, there's a little bit.
It's a smidge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not overflowing, but not a thing.
That is adorable and hilarious.
It was really Yeah. It's the great part of it, I think, it's smart kid. And like, he catches on to these like linguistic things. That's like his space. And so he catches on to them quickly. But it's interesting what you were saying about kind of ancestry. So one of the ways that I always see, because I do a lot of ancestral healing in the records, and one of the things that I often see is like we are on one side, and then our ancestors are on another plane or on the other side, and that whatever it is that we're trying to like unlearn, break, shift, literally often shows up to me mentally as like a log between the planes, right? And it's like our ancestors are yanking on one side and we're yanking on the other to be like, okay, we're done with this. We don't need it anymore. And so I think that's where it's interesting. It's like our ancestors can, I think, be some of our greatest assets in this work, even as it's like kind of their fault. Just totally, I'm being flipped, but like,
I don't know if it's their fault, but it's more like they were going through a set of lessons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that they needed that construct, and we're entering into a whole different set of lessons. Yeah. And that construct doesn't serve us in the new curriculum on Earth School anymore. So there's that. That's why I say we can bless our ancestors, because the work that happened before actually serves to strengthen us. Like, for, I'll give a little quick example is, you know, my great great grandmother was a migrant farm worker, had 14 kids, and they were all in migrant farm working. Well, their hard work, discipline, and dedication for the job that they were doing, that I have. I am a hardworking person. Like, I can really work. So my new lesson is to self-care, be selfish, like learning how to really take good care of myself and not overgive. So we just have flip-flopping lessons, and but we are building on such a strong foundation from our ancestors who all, listen, they did a good job because we're here. Like, if they really screwed up, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, totally. That's what I think. No, I think thank God for my ancestors who did whatever it is that they did, that I'm here now the way that I am.
Yeah. But what I wanted to cycle back to that point, because about like the, I already screwed up my kids. This is actually hard for some people to hear, especially if you've had a parent who's, or a mother especially, who's been like really abusive. There is some clarity whenever I show somebody their Gene Keys chart. It really shows it. Is you can look and you can see, I came in to learn about conflict. I came in to learn about disappointment. I came in to learn about all these things.
Density.
That relationship set that up for me so that I could learn those lessons and not avoid my soul's curriculum, because what soul wouldn't try to avoid a soul's curriculum like that, right? Unless you had some amnesia and forgot about it and were just pummeled right into that lesson. You wouldn't necessarily like go, okay, yes, let me be tortured by my parent now, or let me, you wouldn't, it's too hard. So you have to go through this amnesia process where the whole thing's already set up for you. And you're being programmed inside the womb, and then you're being programmed by your parent who's going through the pattern that you knew you wanted to experience. So you're experiencing it. Maybe it was addiction. Maybe it was sexual abuse. Whatever that pattern was, you wanted at some level to experience that. And this isn't about victim shaming. This is about like, wow, I am so powerful as a soul that I knew that I could experience all of that and I could find my way back to love. And on top of that, I could make myself in service to others. That is the reciprocity loop. We have to get out of the victim consciousness part in order to get the gold. And so that's a process I had to go through for myself, because I felt like, gosh, I really failed my kids. I really felt like I did for a part of my journey. I was like, I really screwed up, or, you know, I made these mistakes, or gosh, you know, like they had to watch me fall apart and go through a spiritual awakening. And how hard was that on them when they were like sixth grade, you know, third and sixth grade, when I started the process, it's been 10 years, like I could really beat myself up. And then at some point it dawned on me, wow, I demonstrated for them the very thing that every single soul is going to be going through on this planet, up close and personal, how to go through a spiritual awakening. You're welcome. Got to see what it looks like.
Yeah. You're like, look at this gift that I gave you.
Yeah.
My husband and I talk about this a lot, because there was a lot of addiction in both of our childhoods. And we both are so deeply grateful to our parents, because they model, like, I feel like in the depth of my being, I know that you can change your life. Like, there's no part of me that doubts that you are wholly responsible for your life in this really beautiful, empowered way. If you want it to be different, you can make that happen. And my husband feels the exact same way. And it's because we watched our parents take this radical responsibility for their life and build something. I'm like getting teared up, like build something that's so abundant in the truest sense of the word. And so I think, and I've tried to remind myself of that when I had moments of like, you should be a perfect mom. It's like, so we all made some agreement here. And like, whether it's the like highest version of me as your mother or some messier version, like
we're going to get where we need to go. As long as I keep going back to something, I think you said in the beginning, Eva, of like coming back to the place of like the compassionate, the like loving action or the loving choice. But it's hard to know what that is.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just throw in my experience as well with growing up with a mother, you know, who the gamut, addiction, abuse, mental illness, all of that stuff. Yes, I will say as a younger person, all I had was anger and resentment and like true hate, like I blame, like you did this to me and I'm fucked up because of you. But I was much younger then. But now that story is completely different. It's true gratitude. Like all of my good things, I think, came as a result of having to learn, you know, those and those things that I think that I, you know, my soul chose to learn. But not only that, and this isn't everyone's story, but my mother, just seeing that she is now 70 and alive, which we didn't think was going to be the case. We thought that, you know, doctors predicted that she was going to die, you know, like in her 30s. It makes me believe in miracles. Like straight up, whenever like I start to just doubt, it's a similar story to you, Kylie. Like you see that you can change. And the belief that I took away was like, I believe in miracles because never in my wildest dreams could I ever think that my mother would be like how she is now and who she, like, it's a straight up miracle. And so sometimes when I like, people ask me like, how do you have trust? Why do you believe in magic? And I was like, because I've experienced it. Like, it's like easy, simple, no doubt. It's just, it's given me this kind of beautiful superpower. So.
And that's why it's important, Kylie, like that you sharing that moment with your son. I feel like that's really important transparency because I feel like it demonstrates for him how to name it. Like, this is what I'm experiencing. Restrain yourself, like restraint, such a powerful gift. And then I'll circle back with you in 10 minutes or 15 minutes or however long after I get like a
totally at 6:30 in the morning after we'd gone to sleep. I gave myself like 12 hours. Or
talk to you later, kiddo. But whatever your boundary, you got to demonstrate that, right? Like that's powerful transparency. This moving into the new paradigm where I think that, you know, we need to teach by example, because if we do what our ancestors did and try to hide things, it's not to say we just, you know, dump your soapbox, you know, story on your kid, that like that, but like, you know, appropriate sharing. But that teaches that emotion management, like instead of denying that they exist or like stepping over it or just being, you know, angry or whatever, we actually just express it like, hey, I'm feeling angry right now and it's not about you. And I need a moment to myself so that I don't take it out on you. So find something to do and I'll be back.
Because the whole idea that we can't express that our emotions are too much for people, whether it's in like a romantic relationship or a friendship or a parent child, like the other person can perceive, whether it's subtly or consciously, they can perceive what you're throwing at them. And so like using my son as an example, if I'm super annoyed and exhausted by him and I pretend that I'm not, that's really confusing, right? Because then he's like, why is mom? He's like, both my kids are crazy perceptive. He said to me before, why are you sad, mom? And I'll be like, oh my God, you didn't even know I was sad. But like something
before you did.
Yeah. And so like if we deny, again, to our kids, to our partners, to like whoever it is, whatever we're feeling, we're kind of manipulating and gaslighting them because they know something to be true. And if I'm just playing with this idea recently of like transparency in the mess, you know, like I'm just going to tell you what's going on. And it's a tricky balance, but it's like, I'm taking responsibility for it. This isn't yours to fix, but also I'm going to name it and like that it exists there.
That feels like medicine to me. Like I wish my parents could be transparent like that. Like that, it's good. That to me, I was like, yeah, that sounds like really good parenting. Like, well,
we got to get over the inner narcissist in order to do that. Like,
Ooh, say more about that.
Oh, yeah. Like, I confronted my inner narcissist when my ex-husband got remarried. And she was, like, trying to outmother me. And I was noticing, like, my desire to appear perfect or my desire to, like, not have her outperform me as a mother. Like, and then I was, then I started noticing things on social media. I started noticing people's, like, perfect mom pictures and, like, they're like having the smiling pictures with their kids. And I was like, how do they get their kids to smile that way? Because mine won't do it. Mine are very like, no, I'm not going to do it right now. They're very independent thinking. And I was like, this is making me look like a bad mother. And then, of course, they were accusing me of being a bad mother. So it was on top of all of it. And I was like, ah. And I just noticed like all the places within me that wanted to like scream because like, why won't my kids perform the way I want them to perform so I can be good, you know? And I had to tear all of that down. Like my oldest son wouldn't let me be there because his journey is he's one of the disruptors, right? He's one of the ones that came on this earth plane to disrupt everything. All your expectations, he just took him and went, oh, that's nice. And, you know, like, so it was such a growth for me because I was so obedient and I did all, like, I was the student. I did all the good things. I went to the good school. I did the plan. And my parents were like, look how successful our daughter is. And then at 42, I blew it all up and was a mess. But, like, I actually am encouraged by, you know, this idea of taking responsibility for your own expectations as a mother, especially of your kids. Taking ownership of the stories you're creating about what would make you a good mother if they did something, and then just putting all of that in the fire and going, that's nice. And just being in the moment, because we have to liberate our kids from these false expectations and these crazy, like, do 5 extracurriculars while doing schoolwork and then have no time to play and just be a kid. Like, we got to get rid of that whole matrix just needs to go, like, gone, in my opinion. It's my opinion.
I share that opinion. Yeah. I'm part of that opinion, but then I'm already said I can see how like insidious it is. I mean, this is a little rabbit hole, but like, but yeah,
all of my friends are tiger moms, so I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'd be curious to know what they had to say about that. Do you know what I mean by tiger moms? There's a
tell me more. I'm clueless.
It's just a what would I even call it? It's the name for like really strict Asian parents with really high expectations. It's the immigrant like Asian trope of like, especially Asian moms who are like, and they're called tiger moms because they're just like intense. And they're like, you got to be in all the AP classes. You got to make sure that you get into all the Ivy Leagues and you got to do all the extracurriculars, like that kind of, it's a cultural thing.
Yeah, I'm at the opposite end of that spectrum, I guess, because although I understand that because I had all those I went to an Ivy League school. So I was thinking one of my kids was going to go Ivy League, right? And then when my first one came out the gates and he just started blowing stuff off, I was like, okay, I guess that's not going to happen. Like, woo, like get rid of my expectations. Because I want to love him through it, you know, I wanted him to find himself and he is finding himself. And it's not what I thought was the greatest thing for him, but he, you know, it doesn't matter what I think. It's not, that's his life. And that's his choice. And that's his dynamism he's bringing. He is charting this course for himself to find himself on the inside and heal all of this inner stuff with his dad. And he's brilliant the way he's doing it. And now that I understand it, because I take the time to soul connect with him and listen. Not that we had this conversation in person, but that I just listen to his soul and I ask questions and I got the full layout and I was like, oh, that's brilliant. I'll just be shutting up now. Because that's smart.
Yeah.
And it's none of my business anyway. So it was nice of him to share, you know? Yeah.
But that takes so much humility. Do you know what I mean? I mean, what you're just talking about, I think is beautiful and an reflection of your own internal work to be able to like let go, to not over-identify with your child, to not try and control everything and to like let them have their own process. Like that's, I think, I mean, again, this is why I expect motherhood is probably so hard, which is why it scares the bejesus out of me. But like,
it is hard.
That takes a lot of work.
It's a path of mastery. Seriously.
The thing that I'm thinking as you're sharing the story too is, I think there's a way that you have to deeply believe that you're enough in order to do that. But in order to like, let go in any way. And like my version of letting go is like bringing him to preschool on Thursday, right? Like, but in order to let go, or like letting him play in the front yard instead of the backyard, you know, you have to believe that, like, you have to believe in your own enoughness, that like you delivered what was needed and that they can pick it up. And I don't mean that to make like motherhood all about you, but I say that because I think sometimes when we're neurotic weirdos with our kids, it's because we are so convinced we're not enough, right? So when we're like, you know, not trusting them to make their own decisions or second guessing or like nitpicking at them, it's like when I do it, I can feel how it's coming from this place of like, well, I haven't done enough. I haven't fixed the situation enough. And so it's like, to go back to your point about your inner narcissist, it's just always actually a story about me. It's not a story about my kid.
That's an important realization, though. And it's okay to have those moments. Like, you could imagine during my spiritual awakening time, it was the years where I was just a hot mess at sometimes, that my son saw a lot of things, you know, and I had those feelings of the only reason I know this is because I track within myself my desire for my sons to love me so much. Mm-hmm. And that they would not choose that other mother, you know, that they would choose me. And I was really insecure about that. And my son, my middle son would call me on. He's like, Mom, you are so insecure about her. And I'm like, you're right. I am told you're right. I am. I didn't deny it. I said, yes, I am. I am so insecure about it because I really love you. And I feel like I, you know, maybe made some mistakes and I wasn't there for you the way I wanted to be. And I have regrets and it's hard to process all that. And it's not your fault or your problem. Like, it has nothing to do with you at all.
Yeah.
And I hear what you're saying to me about, like, you feel my insecurity as a pressure on you. And I don't want it to be that way either. So that's why I think it's important, because my kids were willing to have these conversations with me. But this is what all kids go through with parents that are clingy and, you know, insecure and not really loving themselves enough. That happens everywhere. So that's why it's even more important for moms. Like, we have to go inside and really love ourselves. And if it happens, so what? You confess it. I had conversations with my kid. We have very transparent conversations. And he's like, yeah, Mom. And right before he left, he was like, Mom, you're a great mom. You're awesome. I love you. Okay. I love you. Great. Oh. That was like, awesome. Thank you. Yeah. And he went to college.
I don't know why I'm getting all like tears on my eyes. I think that's something just like so vulnerable in your story. Like, I can't even imagine. Yeah, like your children are just so cherished. And then to have to, be tested like that, like you're saying, the narcissist and the ego. And it's also just a fear of loss, a fear of losing love. And I don't know, there's just something so vulnerable, but beautiful.
Well, my little girl, you know, I'm in touch with my little girl on the inside. And of course she wants to be loved.
Yeah.
But see, like, until I loved her, until I really showed up for my little girl on the inside, always making everybody else have to give her what she needed. And that was part of my spiritual awakening, was this process of healing the mother wound, so that I would be able to hold myself. My kids don't need to worry about me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this is a real thing, like, especially for boys with moms. Like, it's a huge thing that boys can go through with their moms, where they feel like they need to rescue their moms or hold their moms in a certain way because their moms are frail or, you know, emotionally wounded or something. And they need to, like, pick up where the dad left off. It's a big deal.
I think is the motherhood narrative is this total indoctrination of, like, your kids are your everything. Sacrifice everything to put your kids first. And then, like, that's a fucking raw deal for your kids. Like, they don't want, no one benefits from that, no. You know?
It's also a bit of martyrdom. So that's a shadow in the collective consciousness. And if mothers aren't careful, they can really play the martyrdom card. And that also is a big turnoff for your kids, because they feel that energy. And it's not a very, so like, what I really wanted with my kids is I just wanted a clean, straight, I love you, period. No cords, no conditions, no, like, martyrdom, like, you owe it to me. Like, so any place I found myself in those conversations, I just did the spiritual work to clear. It's like, that's not my kid's responsibility. And it's not easy because I want to be like those moms that have the kids that come home and like, oh, I love my mom. And they're like, you know, hanging up and thinking pictures and big smiles. My kids are just, they're just not, they don't, I'm very public and they don't, you know, they don't, yeah. They're up for that.
Well, yeah, we're also given the kids, they chose you, right? So
they,
yeah, you could learn lessons.
Really
that.
Buffeted me with this whole, like, I'm not going to be your savior thing, mom. It's like, ah, so independent, yeah. Strong.
Yeah. It's just so funny.
I laugh all the time at my daughter, the one who's two, as I'm just like, oh, my, like the other day, I'm trying to get her to, she will not take a nap for me. She just won't. My husband, no problem, takes a nap reliably. For me, she's like cracking up. She gets out of bed 1,000 times. It's like a whole, it's a whole thing. And it's so transparent. Like, she naps for dad, she doesn't nap for me. To the point that literally when she asked me for a nap, I'm like, Humberty, are you going to sleep for me? And she's like, yes. It's like, because you don't use, and you know, it's a whole thing. It's kind of funny at this point. But I realized the other day when she was like flailing around and not, you know, not at all pretending to even attempt a nap. And I thought, oh, with me, your independence means more than anything else. Like, I saw how clearly, which is such a like mother-daughter dynamic, totally beautiful ancestral thing happening, that I saw, like, with me, you need to be independent more than you need maybe anything else. And that's why you're not going to nap for me. Like, and I just saw the pattern of it. And I found it really beautiful and hilarious. I'm sure that there will be versions of us learning this lesson together that are not beautiful and hilarious.
Right? And when she's 14.
Yeah. But the 2-year-old version of like, okay, well, you go to bed early, I suppose, is, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny.
But that's part of the texture of the now, just to kind of sum it back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. Is your, that moment you just shared and the texture of that moment and your realization. And I could almost feel your daughter's presence and I could feel your humorous awareness of her and also your profound awareness of your ancestral patterns and the healing that is the texture of the now that I was talking about right there. It's exactly that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. It's funny. I was thinking of the texture of the now as like literally a physical sensation, but you're right. Yeah. That itself is all of these layers and textures happening.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I mean. It's kind of a choice to see if you want to like live life that way, right? It's like you could be like, well, this is just a coincidence, which, it, you know, like no, there's no shade. Like that's not a bad thing. But I mean, it's a choice. It's fun, kind of. Or at least
yes, I think it is.
I do, but I'm assuming people who listen to this podcast think it's fun or else they probably wouldn't be here.
Yeah. If you tuned into our consistently 2-hour episodes, you're not someone who's like, maybe it's all a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're here for the textures of, yeah. And then the layers of the moments. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I feel like I could ask you a million more questions, but Eva has this beautiful question that she often asks at the end of episodes, which is there something that you feel like we should have asked, something important that we didn't talk about?
I'm feeling that question right now. I'm just kind of asking. You know, I feel one thing I do want to say is just these beautiful stories that Kylie, you've been sharing about your kids and, I want to say that I at some point realized that being a mother was like a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if I would have what it took to get to the end of that marathon and deliver my babies out into the world. And I can feel emotion coming up. So I know this is what I was supposed to talk about. It's like right there. Because if I could go back to the texture of those moments, I would give anything. Anything. For those moments. to be back in the texture of the moment of nursing my sons and rocking in the chair and just stroking their little cheeks and feeling their fingers wrapped around one finger of mine, and just the miracle of them growing from my breast milk. Oh my, please. That was just so shocking to me that I could do that. But their little faces and their laughs and their so many millions of little moments. And sometimes I wish that they would all just flood right back into me. And I feel like I did my best to enjoy the moment when I had it. And I kept reminding myself, enjoy this, enjoy this, enjoy this, enjoy this. Like, don't miss this, don't miss this. And I still got all wrapped up inside my own trauma, inside my head. And I was in those weekly psychotherapy sessions just complaining about my life. And I feel like I took the path I needed to walk. And if I could do it again, but I could do it different. And maybe this is why we have so many overlapping timelines, you know, because we just have to go back and try it again. There's just so much beauty in those moments. And it was one of the hardest things I've gone through over the last few years is my kids graduating and leaving the home. Oh. And letting them be men, because once they're grown, I'm not going to hold on anymore. It was like a second birth. It was like they had to like birth out of my womb, but like I thought they already birthed, but then there was a second birth that happened where they tore their claws through my auric field and just like flew. And it was so achingly painful. And also this huge moment of pride. And there they go. They don't need me right now. Yeah. It's just, it's a beautiful journey. And I feel like we're bookending it, you know, at least this part, because I know I'm not done. I mean, I'm sure my kid will be back on my living room floor at some point, you know.
Yes.
But, and you know.
They will all, yeah, you're going to, yeah, they're always going to need you in unexpected ways too.
You know, it's funny. I've shared often on the podcast that I had pretty intense postpartum depression and anxiety with both my kids. And actually, it was coming out of and like rescuing myself from that with my son that actually prompted my spiritual awakening. And I used to fucking hate when people would tell me, oh, enjoy these moments. Like I'd be in the grocery store, like just this ball. I'm going to cry. Like this ball of fear and anger. And some woman at the grocery store would say, oh, enjoy every moment. And I was like, I am literally surviving and I think I'm doing a terrible job. And it's 1,000% true. And I think in the trenches of early motherhood, I feel like it's when I'm able to be really compassionate with how hard it is. That I can enjoy the moments. Like I spent so long just beating myself up. You should enjoy this. You should enjoy this. You shouldn't be worried. You shouldn't be sad. You shouldn't be this. You shouldn't be that. And it just made it so much harder to actually savor it. And anytime I can sit down and just say, man, this is intense. You are lonely. You are scared. You know, whatever the thing is, those are the moments when I actually can enjoy it.
I so relate to what you just shared. I also had postpartum depression. And I wanted more than anything to just have this idyllic, beautiful experience that I saw in the pictures. And I was creating through all those beautiful pictures you get made. And you're like, oh, this is like my Facebook rendition of my motherhood. But like, it's not like that, actually. It wasn't for me. It was a mixture of things. There was a lot of joy and there also was a lot of sadness. There was tension. There was internal, you know, because it's an initiation to become a mother. And that's what I wish people would know more, is that when you become a mother, it's a huge initiation. And there's a lot of ancestral healing that comes through the body. and a lot of inner child healing and early child healing. And it all happens because why? Because you just became a mother and now you're birthing a child and your inner child is like, me too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, my husband and I often say we feel like really lucky because, you know, my mom was 18, right? She went from being a kid to having a kid. And I was, I don't know, in my early 30s when my son was born. So I had like time to sit on a therapist's couch for a decade and like do all the things. And then my kids were born and my inner child was like, hi. You, that was cute that you thought you dealt with me, but now I'm really here.
And there's nothing like actually doing it. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And it's true. And I still, that's sort of like the quagmire of it. It's like, how can you be present with all that was going on in that time? It's so much happening. It's so rich. There's just so many layers and so many textures and so much about it. And I just wanted to drink it all in. And I was in so much pain, I couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's my biggest, like, I did the best I could and I know I did. And the me now looks back and goes, wow, could I just selectively go back and visit some of these moments? Because I would love to just drink in the texture of these things, you know, just from a disvantage point from being done, you know, with that part and just go back and even hold myself, like even hold this young woman I was in. I was 30 with my first baby and just like, oh, sweetheart, you are so rocking it. I know you feel like a mess, but you are kicking its ass. You are amazing.
Do you think that's why people love being grandparents so much?
Oh, definitely. I'm going to tell you, I'm close to that. Like, hopefully not too close if you're watching this. But like maybe 10 years from now. And I'm like, okay, I got 10 years to get to do all the stuff I want to do. Because as soon as that little thing is born, I'm like, I'm on it.
Yeah.
Like, just give me that child.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know it's so funny because I feel like what you were saying, Kylie, is a complete callback to what Carrie was saying, which is essentially at some point, Carrie, in this conversation, you talked about forgiveness or compassion, self-forgiveness and compassion. And Kylie, what you were talking about is those are the callback. Yeah. Those are the things that allow you to hear the moments more. But
in the neutral space that we spoke about in the beginning,
right? Not all of it.
All of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ethan.
But I will say, how old are your sons, Carrie? Or your kids in general?
My biological kids are 18, almost 19, and 21, almost 22. Like 22 in a couple of weeks and 19 in a month. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure, what do I want to say? I'm trying to say, first of all, just I have to just rewind a little bit and just say thank you for what you shared earlier. It was such a profound that I could feel in my bones, like a profound experience, like expression of like motherhood and like, and how tender that is. And I could like just really feel that. But I also want to say it's like, so not like over, like you have this experience of like, you know, letting your kids fly free. But when I really think about my relationship with my parents, yeah, a lot of that really deepened in my 20s. Like,
yeah.
And because we were kind of were on such rocky terms when we were younger. So, I mean, it's just another chapter. You have a whole nother chapter of like a different, it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds of parenting. But I think there's potential for a lot of richness in this phase as well. Cause just for speaking from the child's point, like so much of that richness that I experienced with my parents, yeah, happened in my 20s. So there's still that now, that version of now that you can drink in. It's just, it may not be the finger wrapped around your finger, but it'll be a different kind of expression of parenthood. And
I was, it was really like letting go of my little boys, you know, and my nostalgia. I actually took down all the pictures in the house that were like from that time. I was like, you know, I need to let them be free. I can't hold on to these moments and let them evolve into the men that they are becoming. And let them figure out what that looks like without me telling a story about it. Cause it's not my story anymore. Like I think that mothers are the ones we start this story for our kids so they can have a good self-concept, a good self-identity. hopefully that's the way we're doing it. We also tell story other ways, but you know, that's to get them started. And at some point we need to stop telling the story of them. That's their story now.
Yeah.
And I just have such clear boundaries around that because of my own experience with my mom is also a manifester and she's very good at stories. So we did this dance and I realized in the middle of that dance, I want freedom from other people's stories of me. And I want to give that as a mother.
Yeah.
What a, yeah, the best gift. Yeah.
You.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that requires such a deep love of self. Again, like just the way we keep coming to the same scene, like you have to really be so in love with yourself to be able to let any of the people in your life, your kid, your partner, your dog, like be sovereign. Like you can't do that if you're not like doing the work of being in love with yourself, which again is in the middle of the sheet, is both black and white. It's messy and sometimes hard.
It's a walk of mastery.
Yeah.
It's a very skinny road.
Yeah.
And it's okay to mess it up. I messed it up a ton and my kids still love me. So, you know, I figure it's all right. I mean, we're all learning together. And
there is no, like, it's kind of what we were saying before. Is there messing up? Like in my mind, like there is no messing up because how do you know that's not all part of the grand plan? Like
exactly.
How do you know? Like I think being a parent means being human, and being human means being messy. Like just based on all the things that I've heard the two of you talk about, like, yeah, I don't know. Of course, it's much easier for me to say that. Like when you're a mother, you're like in it and you're like, you could easily, I'm sure, overcalculate everything. And like,
oh, totally overcalculate so many things.
Yeah. But like as the, you know, the 20 foot back perspective is like, and I think this applies to all of life. Something that I oftentimes think about is like, you can't do it wrong.
I agree with you.
I really think so sometimes.
Sometimes when I was in the throes of like, I'm so, you know, anxious, depressed, whatever it was, and so unable to be present the way I felt like I needed to or wanted to with my kids, and they'd be like doing some cute, adorable thing, and I was just like in my own, you know, mental space. I would comfort myself by saying, there's another timeline where exactly this is happening, only I'm totally present for it. And there was a real like gift that I would give myself in that moment that was like, you figure this out somewhere, somewhere in the timeline, in the cosmos, like you're nailing this. And somehow that gave me space to like be, again, just like these little like hacks to be compassionate with the ways it was hard is always what gets me back to being able to love it more. It, I suppose, being life just as much as motherhood.
Mm. Well, because even inside that depression, I had an experience of the postpartum depression. And even inside that, there was my desire to be so totally present for my son, this little infant, and to be like happy and comforting and safe for him. Like there was that desire inside of that depression. So,
oh yeah. I actually was in total denial with my son that I even had postpartum depression for 11 months because I was so good at like just bonding and playing. Like he was everything. And so I was like totally denied to myself that I was a fucking mess. Because I was like, I'm showering and I really love my kids. So this is fine. This is the way it's supposed to be, you know? So yeah, because in the grief, in the pain, in the confusion, there's this like flame burning of real love.
Agape love.
Yeah.
That's why I want to inspire moms, because I feel like, and anyone who feels like their heart is just like ready to crack open, you know, like I only say moms because I know that I've walked that walk, and I know like it cracks your heart open even if you don't want your heart cracked open. Even if you're like not in it for that reason, okay? Like it will still do that. And that heart cracking is like, it's such a powerful experience. And I feel that is what the planet needs now. That's what humanity needs now to move into this next part of our cycle, is to be in the heart undefended. And it's going to take some work to get there. So I feel like anyone who's had their heart cracked open is sort of invited to be in service to others, to love other people the way you've loved the one that cracked your heart open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is the first Hello Universe episode in which I bawled.
Is it?
I had definitely gotten like misty-eyed, but that was the first, like, y'all, I put it on mute so I could wipe boogers off my ass, okay?
Yeah. I'm actually surprised. I feel like there have been so many episodes that I would just assume that we bawled, but yeah, I think this might be, oh, that was really beautiful. Does this feel like a good place for joy?
Yeah. Let's talk about joy.
I feel like we made space for joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carrie, what's one thing that's bringing you joy right now in your life?
I feel joy that my sons are launched on their path. Like, I feel such tremendous joy that both of them are in college right now. And it sounds simple. It has not been a simple path to get there. And I'm really joyful that, because to me, it's like they're each in their own way pursuing their dream of life they've started. And I'm really joyful about that. And I'm joyful that I get this opportunity to bring my messages into the world more and have more space to be in service to others. And I'm super joyful that I've got a gorgeous relationship with my mother for the first time in our lives. Like, that is super fulfilling, to have that heart connection with my mom, and I can hold my heart open and not afraid anymore about being wounded or anything. Like, I just, the way we've transcended that, whatever that was, is a gift and a blessing for us and our whole family.
Mm.
So I'm really grateful for that.
Oh, I'm really loving this mother conversation.
Yeah. Moms are really important.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a motherhood series that Kylie and I wanted to do. Well, and anyway, I think we have a couple of other episodes around motherhood that we kind of clump together maybe and share with our guests in a fun way.
It's a fragmented motherhood series. It's weaving in and out of the rest.
It does that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Eva, what's something that's bringing you joy right now?
Let's see. So I think I have a random assortment of Portland related things that are bringing me joy. So Carrie, I moved to Portland this summer, and I'm still getting to know the city. And I think I was just really enjoying like the little delights, I think, that Portland is gifting me. Particularly, maybe it's like the neighborhood that I live in, but I live really close to just like little things that I didn't have such easy access to when I was living in Arizona. So I am in love with my local like tea herb store, and I love herbalism. So, but I kind of lost that when I was living in Arizona, and now there's a tea store like 5 minutes from my house, and I just love going in there and just hanging out and like looking at all the different herbs and all of that's so fun. And also like I spent like an afternoon in Powell's, which is like the biggest bookstore in the world. And it's like just city things like that, that I'm like, I just love, like, this is just bringing such brightness into my summer. It feels like summer and bookstores and herbs, something about all of that mushed together has been making me feel quite joyful. So that's my share for this week.
I love that.
What about you, Kylie? Thank you.
So in the slowdown of the summer,
I feel like my kind of spiritual practices have unfolded in this new way. And I've shared a bit on the podcast how I found myself doing more ritual work and, like, you know, candle magic. But I've also found that, I always have been someone who works with, for the majority of time, I've been someone who's worked with deity, right? Like, the Blessed Mother's always been, like, a really prominent figure. I joke, like, even when I was Catholic, like, I stopped being Catholic, but I kept the Virgin Mary, you know, and I was like, like, even my phase where I was like, I don't know if I believe in God, but I have 6 Virgin Mary statues in my house. And I've often felt like deities have found me. Like, Ganesh is someone who just, like, kind of kept popping up again and again and again until I was like, okay, I guess we're a thing. Like, I'm going to go buy some Ganesh statues. And so all of that has been unfolding this summer in a really beautiful way. So, like, I set up a corner of our home that's, like, my desk, and I have, like, it's just, like, every day I'm adding more shit to it in terms of,
like your little altar.
It is. It's like this working altar of, like, dried. And I'm not really precious about altar stuff, but it's, like, you know, my pens and my dried flowers and my, you know, deity figures. And it's just, like, it's just this little corner that's making me really happy. And my kids are really involved in it. Like, my kids keep being like, let's do a spell, Mom. Can we do a spell together? Because, like, we just, like, light a candle and set intentions. But also I've had, like clarity, you know, slowing down always creates clarity. And so I've had this clarity that's brought forth, like, new deity energy that is not actually new. You know, I think if you're someone who works with deity, some figure will show up and you're like, oh, you've been here forever. And so in particular, there's 2 really beautiful deities, Oshun, who's this river goddess who, like, shows up a lot for me. And then Loki, like, not the Marvel comic character, but, like, the Norse god of mischief. Have just shown up in this, like, really loud, like, you know, I mean, the whole energy of the god of mischief, it, like, kind of just banged the door down to your house, right? So, like, there's just, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that my spiritual practices feel really vibrant and, like, woven into my whole family, and they feel really, like, silly and fun and light, even as they're also, like, you know, full of shadow work. And I am really loving this chapter.
Yeah, I love it. It sounds like you're really enjoying it.
Well, yeah,
hence the term joy.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely am. I definitely am.
That's so really rich. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. All right.
All right. Carrie, how can people find you, follow you?
They can visit my website.
You spend more time in your circle of
SKE.com. And from there, you can find my books and the podcast and courses, programs that I teach, shamanic healing sessions if you want one, or just, like, connect and talk. I have those options too. And I do my podcast. Right now it's called Soul Nectar Show, although I'm being invited from this marketing professional who also has a marketing line in her gene keys. I was like, oh, she is my person. Oh my goodness. She's got a marketing line. Okay. She's like, you just need to be Carrie Hummingbird. I was like, oh, I guess I'm there.
Oh, I love that. That's actually funny, because I was going to mention this on the show. I'm actually changing all my socials to, by the way, dear listeners, for those of you who know me as Bad Bitch Living, that will now be changing to
I feel like a layer of being.
Yeah, it is a shift, like, that you make.
By the way, I've been hiding behind this thing called the Soul Nectar Show, but it's me. Hi.
So
like, it feels like that. And it felt a little precious. Like, I actually teared up when I realized what it was. And it's kind of like, I felt like I'm behind stage and there's, like, an audience out there, like, whoever I'm meant to help. And there's these curtains and I'm, like, kind of peering out the curtain from behind to see, like, who's in the audience. And it's like, oh, do I feel safe enough to come out of this place and just open the curtains and just kind of like walk out and go, okay, I'm here. Hi.
That feeling, yeah. No.
Yeah, it's been me all along.
Yeah, you know, it feels nice to remove like that layer of appearance. That's exactly the layer that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah. So it's probably going to be just called Carrie Hummingbird.
Yeah, that's exactly how it felt. Yeah,
the new frequency. I mean, I'll keep on with this one until I make the shift, and then it'll be Carrie Hummingbird, I guess. Yeah, the Carrie Hummingbird show.
The Carrie Hummingbird podcast, you know?
I have so admired Oprah, so I've admired Oprah.
Yeah,
that's what I was feeling. I love that.
Everything she went through. Yeah. And just like, and to have that show and everything, and just be Oprah. Just to be Oprah. I mean, like, okay, I'm just going to be Carrie Hummingbird. Yeah. So.
We love Oprah.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, exactly. Just be Oprah.
I'm like, please be my muse for like stepping into my own power, you know.
You're
great. What a beautiful conversation. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm sending so much love to everybody who's been listening to this the whole time, and I hope it's touched your heart and brought you joy today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.